to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. And for Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander. And our buddy Max Armstrong is going to be along a little later on with an interview about agriculture commodities. Let's talk about the equities on Wall Street. Oh, my, what a week. The Dow Industrial Average rebounded more than 300 points on Friday in what still amounted to the worst week in 2 years. The Dow ended up today 330.44 points, or 1.38%, closing at 24,191. The S&P 500 rallied about a 1.5% to finish at 2619, while the NASDAQ Composite added 1.4%, closing at 6874. Volatility is king on Wall Street over the last week, and on Friday there was a swing of about 1,000 points on the NASDAQ. The Dow and the S&P 500 both lost 5.2% on the week, while the NASDAQ shed 5.1% as rising interest rates spooked investors. The Dow average experienced two drops of more than 1,000 points and two gains of more than 300 points during this volatile week. At their lows this week, all three major indices were in correction territory from the record highs reached in January. Jim Bianco is head of the Chicago-based advisory firm Bianco Research. He says what's happened here is an understanding that inflation is returning and that the central bank quantitative easing that we've grown accustomed to is no longer there. It's coming to an end. He said, since the financial crisis, this is the first 10% correction in stocks that has not been accompanied by a significant fall in interest rates. The Dow dropped 1,032 points on Thursday, and the average posted its worst point drop in history on Monday, closing 1,175 points lower. Monday's decline of 4.62% was also its worst daily percentage drop since August 10th of 2011, when it also fell 4.62%. The recent turmoil in equities began last Friday, when the Dow lost 666 points after a better-than-expected jobs report ignited inflation fears. That fall was exacerbated Monday after the yield on the benchmark 10-year T-note hit a four-year high, sending the Dow tumbling another 1175 as investors grew more nervous about an overheating economy. Trouble with securities called exchange-traded notes that decline in value when volatility increases likely helped create more turmoil in the markets this week. The CBOE's volatility index, the VIX, the market's best fear gauge, shot above 40 again on Friday after jumping as high as 50 earlier in the week. For comparison, at the end of January, the VIX was below 14. On Tuesday of this week, yields backed off their multi-year highs, giving the Dow a 560-point bounce and some relative stability, it seemed, on Wednesday. But between another round of strong economic news, hawkish comments from the Bank of England, and an expensive government funding bill, yields rallied again on the bond market, sparking Thursday's sell-off. The 10-year Treasury ticked up to 2.85% on Friday. The note yield flirted with 2.885% on Thursday, a four-year high that sparked major equity sell-offs earlier in the week. Amazon made some news again on Friday. The company is gearing up to launch a delivery service for businesses, pitting Jeff Bezos' logistical prowess against carriers like FedEx and UPS. FedEx and UPS shares both were down on Friday at 2.6% for UPS and 1.7% for FedEx. Amazon also fell, but by 0.8%. Other stocks that struggled during the week include 3M, American Express, and ExxonMobil. Crude oil prices fell for a sixth day on Friday, posting their worst weekly decline in 2 years. West Texas Tea settled at $59.20. That's down 3.2% on the day. Well, while the week certainly spooked a lot of traders, many Wall Street strategists believe that the recent volatility should not affect the rest of 2018. In other words, don't get too worked up about it, which seems to be the message that we are getting from Susan Schmidt. Susan is a vice president of portfolio management at Westwood in Dallas, Texas. And Susan, what a week it was.
Oh my goodness, yes. It's quite a change from what we've experienced in the recent past. Volatility has come back to the markets, and we are feeling it once again. We finally hit the trigger point, the tipping point, if you will, where we're somewhat concerned about interest rates and the threat of inflation. We saw a very strong jobs report number last Friday, which is a positive indicator for the economy. We know the Fed has been gradually raising interest rates, and they're likely to continue that. But the market finally hit the tipping point where market participants started to get concerned about the prospects of inflation going forward, and should we see higher inflation, would that dampen the economy and dampen business prospects? As interest rates go up, then certainly debt becomes more expensive, financing for companies becomes more expensive, and would that make them slow down on this wonderfully upward trajectory that we've been experiencing?
Let's talk about the bond market as well. You know, I was told that we're close to 3% on the yield on 10-year bonds. Is that enough to get people to get out of equities?
Well, not yet. And I think that, remember, historically, we're still seeing extremely low interest rates. What has been shocking has been the move in interest rates on the 10-year. And so the 10-year bond has gone from a 2.4% yield at the beginning of the year to, you know, 2.85, which has really been a phenomenally large move, very unusual that we would see a move of that magnitude in such a short period of time. But it just shows you that people are really, you know, trying to figure out how to position in this new environment. We're going back to what used to be considered normal, where interest rates are rising again. We are seeing a little bit of inflation, a healthy degree of inflation in the market, and we're seeing an economy that's showing some pickup. So this is, volatility is normal for the market. We just didn't experience it for a long time. We've forgotten what it's like to go in a negative direction. And really, I think this is just the emotional outburst of a lot of pent-up feelings in the market. As we said, this has been the most painful upward grind of the market in recent history. People were just concerned about the market always going up and never coming down. This is a little venting of that.
What was the figure I heard about the amount of money that came out of equities over the last week? Is it in the trillions?
It is in the trillions. However, remember that if we look at this, we've hit the correction point where we've been down 10% from the market highs. But down this week, we had a nice rally today. We're about down a little over 5%, 5 to 6% across the indices for the week. And yet, from the beginning of the year, we're still only down 2 to 3%. We forget that we went through January and ended January up, you know, over 6% for the markets, which was truly incredible and really not sustainable. So all we're doing is seeing the settling and a give back of what was an abnormally aggressive upward move in January.
I see the S&P is actually, what, only maybe 4% below its the all-time high that it set back in, January 26th or something like that?
Yes, and so we're not down all that significantly. Again, the magnitude of this move is impressive only because it happened and we've seen the ups and down gyrations concentrated in the last 5 or 6 days. And so that has been surprising to people. And then again, we've forgotten what it feels like to go in, you know, an up and down direction, not just up all the time. And so that's caused some consternation, and it's perhaps an unpleasant reminder. But this is natural for the market, and this is indicative of a healthy market.
Well, I don't think that there are a lot of people who have forgotten what 2008 was like when our 401ks went the other direction. Do you think?
Although you'd be surprised when you think about the people who are entering Wall Street now and working in finance now, a lot of the younger people have only been active in the markets, and as our millennials come into, you know, their jobs, earnings power, and their savings years where they're starting to accumulate and starting to get a 401k, for the last 10 years, they've really experienced nothing but an up market. So this is a change for them.
Yeah, true. Let me throw this theory out to you that I heard from one analyst out of Boston who poo-poos the inflation theory, the bond theory. He thinks it is, as he put it, a small group of people, guys, he put it, in one corner of the sandbox who decided that they were going to try to get out and short the market and take a bunch of profit out from the gains over the last year. Is that even feasible? Is it possible?
Well, if you start trading in illiquid instruments or very limited markets, I suppose that might be possible. But this is a you know, very broad-based market move. We're talking about the S&P 500 is seeing this, the Dow Jones. Again, we're talking about impacts to companies and market valuations across billions and trillions of dollars. So it's hard to say that a small group of guys could really have forced this all by their own doing.
Let me ask you this also, you know, in the conspiracy theory world, but this may be a little bit more close to reality-based, and that is, I've heard that there are some ETFs pulling the market lower, or at least leading the way. Am I even close to describing this correctly?
All right. Well, what we did have was, and one of the potential triggers for the market and some of the repercussions on Monday and Tuesday was that people had been short volatility, and there was an index that measures volatility, and they had been short that index, meaning that they were betting that, in fact, volatility would come back. And we did see that. So there was some pressure on the market. And again, this is where we go back to an ETF that wasn't very liquid, didn't have a lot of value behind it, but in attempting to cover that illiquid market, it did cause some stress on the ETF overall. And so that can be construed as a trigger. It's in some ways similar to what we saw in 2008, where you get these obscure derivative instruments that are byproducts of the market, but in rare circumstances can come back and be a trigger back to the market overall. Nothing to be fearful of, but it is something, it's an interesting fact to note.
What's your sense of what percentage of trades are made by algorithms, by robo-trades, or however you want to describe it?
Oh, my gosh, right, the high-frequency traders. You know what, Steve, I do not have a good data point for that.
Okay.
Certainly, you know, versus 10 years ago, a lot more. And you saw the impact of how trading and the financial markets have changed over the last 10 and 20 years by seeing the speed at which the market corrected and the speed at which things moved, where you could tell that, you know, we're not taking the time for people to make decisions. A lot of these decisions are being made by those algorithms and computer-driven trades that happen instantaneously and where decisions are made in the millisecond, not for a person, you know, to take that 1, 2, 3 second pause to actually think it through. So you can see the speed of change that happened this week was very aggressive, and I think that reflects the change in the underlying participants in the market this week.
So we can take a breather over the weekend, but what do you see happening next week? Where do you have any crystal ball visions?
Oh, I wish I did. What I do think is that we're going to see more volatility. There's more ups and downs. I don't think this is over. There's a big number coming out that people are going to focus on next week, and it comes out on Valentine's Day, and it's going to be an indicator for inflation, because people are really going to be looking at the consumer price index and seeing what's going on, because it's, again, inflation is one of the triggers for this, and people considering and thinking about what's going to happen with interest rates going forward. Our next big indicator as well will be the semiannual testimony from the Fed chair, Jay Powell, will be presenting to Congress at the end of the month, and people will be focusing in on that to hear what he says. His should be a continuation of the same message. He's been a member of the Board of Governors, so he's not a new entity to the market. And so far, all the statements to various Fed governors have come out in the last week and spoken in different places have been really a continuation of the same message. The Fed's going to be very prudent about raising interest rates. They see an underlying healthy economy, and you know, the reason for gradual increases in interest rates rolling forward, of course, always backstopped by looking at that underlying data and making sure the economy is solid.
Can we talk about the oil market briefly? The crude oil futures fell below $60 for the close on Friday. Do you know what's going on there?
Crude oil is just a reflection in this case. As crude oil prices have come off during the week, it's a little bit of concern. We're just seeing concern over overall demand in the economy. Oil tends to be a reflection of people's views on business prospects going forward, the strength of the economy, overall demand. If the economy is slow, there might be a little less need for energy, and oil prices tend to reflect that in the short term.
Is the strength of the dollar involved in that at all?
The strength of the dollar is involved in that. That's a whole other issue that's been going on. Remember that not that long ago, we were talking about comments made by Steve Mnuchin, members of the administration, President Trump, with regards to the dollar at the meeting in Davos. And so that does have some impact on it. And the dollar position, we've seen the dollar that had been very strong. The dollar is weakening relative to other currencies slightly. And so that, of course, has some implications as well. That's not, I don't believe, the main driver of volatility in the market right now.
So are we still, we're back up, the Dow was back up Friday. Are we still in correction territory, or have we come back within that 10%?
We've come back from within that 10%, but I do think that, you know, we're certainly in volatility territory. So that's something to keep in mind. Expect the ups and downs duration to continue. But remember that we are also still in earnings season. So we're still hearing companies' management teams come out and report, talk about their fourth quarter earnings, talk about their outlook for the coming year. And those earnings, for the most part, have been largely positive. Companies are out talking about how the new tax plan is going to impact them and, you know, how that's going to impact their profitability. All those are positive. And what we've seen has not been alarming. What we've heard have been some very strong, you know, good messaging and good prospects for the businesses.
Susan Schmidt of Westwood in Dallas, thank you very much. Max Armstrong's coming along right after this.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Mike Cordonier, welcome, sir. Good to have you back with us.
Always my pleasure, Max.
This time of the year, we don't know whether you're going to be in the United States or in the Southern Hemisphere. You often go there in the wintertime to check on crops, but you stay close to them regardless of where you are, don't you?
Well, South America is kind of in the news this year.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's go country by country to begin with. Brazil, of course, in the midst of producing a big soybean crop, but I have to ask you, first and foremost, about all of those pictures coming out of Brazil again this year of trucks on the dirt roads.
That's Highway 163 heading north from Mato Grosso up to the Amazon River. That highway, there's about 180 kilometers that are not asphalted. And unfortunately, some of that non-asphalted area is in a mountainous region. They had very heavy rains. And as you said, the picture showed about 4,000 trucks waiting in line in a traffic jam. Now, it's not as bad as last year. The Brazilian Army is in charge of the whole project, and they pre-positioned like 220 people plus heavy equipment in anticipation of this problem. But it rained more than anticipated, and it's a big, long, steep grade. And these dual trailer trucks just can't make it up that grade. It's a clay roadbed, and it's slick. So it's going to be a problem until the rains end, unfortunately. That's not going to be for a while.
Did I understand you to say nearly 4,000 trucks?
4,000 trucks, yeah. Each one carries about 50 tons. So you got, what, 200,000 tons of soybeans kind of waiting in line. I saw a video the other day. It took three road graders hooked together to pull one truck up this hill. And you got 4,000 waiting behind you, so you can't do that one at a time. It has started to rain less. So as soon as you get a couple days without rain, I think they can rectify the situation.
It would clear up rather quickly, then, you're saying?
Yes.
If
the rain stops. Now, they promise to finish asphalting this road before the next rainy season, so it all should be cleared up by fall.
I didn't see the line of trucks, but I did see a video clip on Twitter the other day, and I don't know if it was, it looked like it was a soldier standing there talking. I, of course, do not have command of the Portuguese that you do, so I didn't know what he was saying, but you could see the road, and it looked miserable. It looked like just a muddy cow path.
Oh, it's terrible. And these trucks are really heavy. And they're dual trailers, so they're huge. And they just wreak havoc with a dirt road.
Now, has there been some trucker unrest also? I mean, obviously, they can't be pleased about this, but have there been some labor disputes too?
Oh, yes. They have been burning tires and blocking the highway in protest of the situation. In fact, all three countries have trucker protests. In Argentina, starting earlier this week, the truckers are protesting low freight rates. They wanted higher rates. So they're blocking shipments of soybeans to the port in Rosario, Argentina. And in Paraguay, there's been a truck strike now for about a week and a half. They're protesting these big trucks coming out of Brazil into Paraguay. to haul soybeans. So there's a lot of surface transportation issues in South America.
Strikes are not uncommon at harvest time, are they?
No, it's a regular practice. I expect a lot more in Argentina. Inflation is high. The economy is not doing so good. So there'll be more coming for sure.
I remember one year we were there. My cameraman at the time, Phil Reed, and I are in the streets of Buenos Aires, and he got caught up in that strike. They were going down the street, and as they were moving, he was moving along with them. But it was a little bit unnerving. They were firing off cannons, and you know, you weren't sure what was going to happen there as this was going down the street. But it's commonplace, isn't it?
It's commonplace. So, and usually the strikes don't last very long. The government accommodates them. When you got inflation 30-40%, you have to have a big pay raise every year. And then you start losing, you know, a lot of ground economically. So it's a common practice in Argentina.
The bottom line is it has very little effect on exports after all is said and done. It's only short-term effect, these disruptions such as transportation problems.
Now, the problem they had last year, a year ago in Brazil, it did last long enough that 11 vessels had to leave the Amazon ports and go to other ports in Brazil to get their soybeans. Now, it cost lots of money for a lot of people. They broke contracts, all that sort of thing. So this year's not as bad as last year.
So if we're thinking that there might be a little business swing to the United States because of this, don't count on it, you're saying.
A little bit. Probably more swing to the United States because just the delay in the plant, delay in the harvesting of the soybeans in Brazil.
Talking about the crop conditions themselves, what are those rains doing in Brazil to the fields?
Okay, Brazil is about maybe 6 or 8% harvested, a little bit slower than last year. It is slowing down early harvest. Now, they planted late, so they're harvesting late. And my current estimate is 112 million tons for Brazil. Last year, they did 114 million tons. CONAB just released their latest estimate this week, and they're at 112 million tons as well.
That's the Brazilian body that estimates crops.
Correct. That's the Brazilian equivalent of the USDA. And they raised their estimate. Brazil soybeans might go up a little bit more. Hmm. Now, in Argentina, their soybean estimate is going to go down because of drought. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. But the soybean total production in South America, Brazil might go up a little bit, Argentina might go down a little bit. So it's kind of a wash, so to speak, for soybeans in South America. But that's not the case for corn. The corn crop in Brazil is going to be way down. The corn crop in Argentina is going to be way down. There's no upside to corn in South America, only a downside.
Part of the reason is because of the rains delaying the soybean harvest in Brazil, and that will in turn then delay the planting of the corn crop?
Right. That second crop of corn, double crop corn after soybeans.
Say that word for me.
Safrinha.
Safrinha. You put that little
perfect
bit of a roll in there, don't you?
Way to go, Matt. Pretty good. Pretty good.
I usually never say it right, so I wanted to hear you say it.
No, the safrinha crop is 70% of Brazil's total corn crop, and that's planted after soybeans. Now, the soybean harvest in Brazil, in Mato Grosso, it's about 2 weeks later than normal. In Paraná, which is the second biggest safrinha state, it's about 2 or 3 weeks later than normal. So the idea is that it's going to get past the ideal planting window, which is about the third week of February in Mato Grosso.
It's coming up quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And they are only about 10% planted. So they got a lot to go yet. If it rains down between now and the end of February, it's going to delay it even more. I don't think they plant all the safrinha corn. I think it's going to be down about 10%. At least the first 70% will be planted, no problem. It's that last 30% you got to wonder about. It's going to come to March 1st, and a farmer's got to decide, should I plant my corn late and expect a low yield, and they have low prices. Right now it's about $2.20 a bushel in Mato Grosso for corn. They need $2.50 a bushel to break even. So if you plant it late into early March, the chances of above trend line yield are really small. And all the advisory firms in Brazil tell the farmers, you need above trend line yields to make money this year on safrinha corn. And if you plant it late, that's not going to happen. So I don't think they plant all their safrinha corn.
So some of the acreage won't go in that they had intended to put in.
Correct. They'll go to maybe some grain sorghum, maybe a little bit of sunflowers, maybe millet, or just put in a grass to keep the ground covered, you know, until the next harvest.
Help us get our arms around this supply a little bit. I know you don't make price projections, but you watch that balance sheet for the world very closely. Is this kind of a reduction in the intended corn crop of Brazil enough to affect that global balance sheet for corn?
You know, we're kind of setting the stage here for maybe better corn prices, and here's why. A reduction in the corn production in South America by itself would not spike the corn price, but it sets the stage for the next crop in the United States. Now, we've had two record crops in a row for corn. If we have just an average crop or a mediocre crop, then South America will have set the stage for a reduced supply. Then if the United States comes in with not a record crop, then we may have a story for corn. So I think corn could have a story here, depending on what we do in the United States this coming year.
It's a big if, isn't it? But, as you say, if those events were to happen back-to-back, it could make things a little bit different here.
You know, the last 2 years, corn crop in the United States has been unbelievably good. Will it be a third year in a row? I don't know. South America is stubbing his toe a little bit on corn, and I always kind of think that South America kind of leads United States in weather. You know, always kind of similar. So if they have sort of a hot, dry summer, maybe we might have one too.
And we are using a lot of corn.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We need it. And for soybeans, you know, South America is doing okay on soybeans. That's no problem. Not too much of a problem this year. But we need a record crop every 6 months. And if we don't get a record crop every 6 months, supply starts to get tight. Now, we've had a record crop in South America a couple years in a row in the United States. So once again, if the United States has a mediocre crop, but then we're setting the stage for better prices.
How worried should we be about this tit-for-tat trade concern with China, with the possibility that they might strike back with some action on our soybean imports and opt instead for more coming out of the Southern Hemisphere?
Well, I think you better be concerned about it. They may not do it for soybeans, but they might do it for grain sorghum and DDGs and other products. You know, they need the soybeans, okay? But if South America, especially Brazil, has a big soybean crop, then they can afford to antagonize the United States a little bit. This whole thing about tit for tat, it's stupid, Max. You know, we should have free trade every place, and American farmers will suffer a lot if we start closing off trade avenues.
Let's keep our fingers crossed that the guy in the White House has the correct negotiating strategy.
You better cross both fingers.
That, too, is a big if, isn't it? Thank you, Mike.
Right.
Appreciate it. Good to see you.
Always my pleasure.
Mark Cardonier, the Soybean and Corn Advisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Welcome back to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. I'm Steve Alexander in for Orion Samuelson, and let's take a look at the ag commodities, beginning with corn. Well, let's go with all three, corn, beans, and wheat. All have been trying to make a comeback so far this year. Corn year-to-date is up about 3.1%, beans up about 2.2%, and wheat about 5% higher year-to-date. Over the past year, though, corn is down 10.2%. The last year has not been good for beans either. Not as bad, though, down 4.2%. And wheat has taken the biggest beating among the three, down 11% over the past year. On Friday, wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade closed down 1.53%, 7 cents per bushel lower at 4.49 and a quarter. That's for March delivery. March beans were down 4 cents at 9.83 and three quarters, and March corn was down 3 3/4 cents at 3.62 a bushel. The soybean and corn advisor is what we call him. His name is Mike Cordonier. He joins Max Armstrong now for a discussion of South American crops. You're listening to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. And as we wrap it up for this week, we had quite the week on Wall Street with the Dow bouncing more than 300 points on Friday. That's a nice bounce back, but still, it posted its worst week in 2 years, and that's across the board for the Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ, all having quite the week with volatility ruling the way. Crude oil was lower today on Friday, down nearly 2%. At $59.05, and gold also finishing lower, down 90 cents an ounce at $1,318. Thank you for spending your time with The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. For Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong, I'm Steve Alexander.